Blog Talk Radio.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road, when along came a semi with a high and canvas covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac, with me you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa, Oklahoma, Tampa, Panama, Mattawa, La Paloma, Bangor, Baltimore, Salvador, Amarillo, Tocopilla, Barranquilla, and Padilla. I'm a killer. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert, bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Boston, Charleston, Dayton, Louisiana, Washington, Houston, Kingston, Texas, County, Monterey, Faraday, Santa Fe, Dallas, Glen.
It's time for the next edition of the Riveting Jumble Justice Radio Show, broadcast worldwide on Blog Talk Radio. Turn up your speakers and listen closely, since you may be asked questions later. Keep your phone handy, since we encourage you to call in your comments to the host and guests on today's show. The listener call-in number is 347-996-5983. Once again, the number is 347-996-5983. You will also find the number on the top of the homepage for the Jumble Justice Radio Show. I'm Audrey, your technical and spiritual advisor for the radio broadcast. And now, without further delay, allow me to introduce your eminently qualified and inspiring host for Jumble Justice, Professor Keith Haley.
Well, thank you very much, Audrey. I appreciate that, as every week you get us tuned up and on to the set. Welcome to Blog Talk Radio and the Jumble Justice Radio Show. I'm your host, Keith Haley. And for those of you who are new listeners, we all welcome you, especially tonight. And we always want to thank Johnny Cash for taking us on that fine ride across the United States to more than 90 different cities and states in that song. And Johnny, you keep on trucking up there. Someday, most of us are going to try to be up there with you. Emily and Mike, good to see you tonight. And Emily, I know this is the night that we're going to get to tell your story. So you have that news clipping handy that you've been saving for a couple weeks, because it's an interesting one. We should have had it on last week since it related closer to the topic, but nevertheless, we'll get it on tonight. I hope you folks enjoyed last week's show. It was certainly, I would say, an unusual topic and a unique one. I doubt that anyone else that day on radio was talking about the subject of scent dogs and appeals court decisions that were rendered relative to the scent of the no scent of a police dogs, and a very interesting study in the future of what's going to be done with these dogs is just incredible. And as you heard our commentator talk about the idea that they're already looking for stolen and smuggled DVDs and this kind of business, and they're working on smelling a terrorist, whatever exactly that will mean, but that will be very interesting. But tonight our show is as interesting, if not more so, and it's about carrying concealed weapons in the state of Ohio. The subject keeps coming back. As you know, Ohio revised its CCW law in April, making the carrying of a concealed weapon in an automobile a little easier and certainly a little more sensible in terms of the auto driver protecting themselves should the need ever be. But we're going to talk about the restrictions that are set up. One of the things that can be done, as it is in many states, is a business proprietor, government offices, etc., can actually post signs that warn CCW holders, license holders, that they cannot carry their weapon inside those premises. And we're going to have a researcher on tonight that's done the first study like that in the state of Ohio. And he did his study in the city of Cincinnati, and we'll be introducing him very, very shortly. Let me tell you a little bit about the show if you're a first-time listener, or review it if you've been with us before. Our purpose is always the same. We're trying to discuss news and issues and events and developments inside the field of criminal justice, a field that's humorous sometimes, but certainly always difficult in terms of its practice. And our show is dedicated each week to those tireless police, courts, corrections, and juvenile justice professionals who protect us throughout the United States and throughout the world. So the kind of look that we try to provide in this show is an inside examination of criminal justice professionals and their practice. And we're trying to do that each week. And I think if you go over the last several months, you'll find that there have been some interesting topics on them. We've had outstanding commentators ranging from, crime analysis to university policing to the Haitian prison system and on and on and on. So it's been a very interesting series of shows. And those shows are archived, the last five, in case you would like to hear them. And if you would want to hear one of the older shows that you know about, you can certainly contact me, and we can send that to you by email. Let me comment a little bit about the magic of Blog Talk Radio. It is something indeed. It's a leading-edge technology. Alan Levy is the CEO of the Blog Talk Radio Network, and he's the genius behind this thing. And I was just watching a little bit of the preparation for the Republican presidential candidate debates tonight, and I saw Arianna Huffington on there, and she was they had mentioned in her promo about her as a commentator that she had written the book Fearless. And if you go to Blog Talk Radio, Arianna Huffington has a radio station there, a show there, and where she plugs her book Fearless. So you'll recognize many people if you just go to Blog Talk Radio. I forget how many genres there are now. There's probably up close to 100. But politics, conservative, liberal, straight, mainline, that's the most popular genre, and there are literally dozens and dozens of shows in that category. So they're well up over 2,000 or 3,000 shows now. But let me tell you what's possible in case you might have an interest in doing this. Any person, any interest group, that can be anything from dart throwing to motorcycle riding to cigar smoking, something even more esoteric than that. If you want to study, bicycle braking or whatever, you can have your own show, and you can broadcast live and streaming audio over the Internet worldwide to an unlimited number of listeners. I always say this again in case people don't get it the first time. Anybody can have a show where they can broadcast worldwide in streaming audio over the Internet, and it doesn't cost a doggone thing. It's absolutely free. And you can do that to an unlimited number of listeners. Some of you may remember back in the mid-90s, you could have a show like this on certain networks on the Internet, but you could only broadcast to like 40 or 50 people at a time, and usually if you got 30, it clogged up and wouldn't work. And I keep saying that you can do this 14 hours a week, but it's probably actually more now as the capacity for the Blog Talk Radio Network builds. So it's a very interesting idea, and I think the future is here. These shows are clearly are archived within 5 to 10 minutes after the show's over, so you can go back there and replay them, the last five shows, or you can actually download them to your computer or an MP3 player or whatever you would like. So I'm fond of saying, and like the motto on the back of Cheez-Its, get your own box where you can get your own show, and it's a fascinating mechanism. What's coming up in the future? I pushed this a little bit last week, but look for this. We're going to try to do a show, and I've got a contact information now. I'd like to get a police chaplain and a prison chaplain together and talk about what each one of those do on the opposite end of the system, so to speak. I think that'd be a very interesting show. I haven't heard a chaplain talk about their work for a long, long time, so that should be interesting. We're working on something on tasers, but I want to get some folks involved in that have a lot of experience, perhaps even the sales and the training of the taser. So that That would be an interesting show. The others, I'll wait. I sent a contact out about one of these famous cases, murder cases in the United States, or series of murders, and we'll have to see what happens on that. Well, tonight's show, let me tell you what's on. I'll talk a little bit about the news, and I think we're going to bring our guest commentator on here in just a few seconds. Our guest tonight is Joe Kendall, and he conducted a study entitled No Guns Allowed, Who is Preventing Concealed Firearms in Cincinnati, Ohio, and Why? And he's done the first of, I hope, would be a series of studies that others would follow up on around the state. And let's get some data and some information and see what is actually going on in terms of restricting carriers of concealed firearms in various kinds of places within city or county limits. And his study results are very interesting. And he'll tell you tonight, in some ways puzzling, and they require some interpretation, and he'll be able to do that for you, and then even have some prognosis about the future, about what this might mean. Here's what you do as a listener or a caller. You can listen on your computer with your Windows Media Player, or you can call in by landline phone or by cell phone. And when you do call in, you can hear the whole show on the phone. And, of course, I can click on a switchboard and click you on, and you can talk with me and the other guests online, and I can talk to as many as five people at the same time. And the call-in number is 347-996-5983, and 347-996-5983. Audrey, I haven't forgot you. If you could hold on just a second, we're going to bring our commentator on for just a moment, our guest for tonight, and then we'll get your weekly blonde joke, if that's okay. Okay. All right, here we go. Let's see if we have our guest on tonight. Is this Joe?
Yeah. Hi, Keith.
Joe, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
Just fine. Weather fine down there in Kentucky? Is that where you're calling from?
Greater Cincinnati area, yeah.
Okay. Well, good.
It's not too bad.
You've probably never heard our show before, but one of the things we do, my spiritual and technical advisor for the show, Audrey, happens to be a blonde, and she loves blonde jokes. Now, she'd like to do five or six a night, but, you know, we really can't do that. You know what I told her? To get her own show if she wants to do that. She
of course.
Blonde Show Network, but she has one tonight that we're going to give her a chance on. Let's see what this one is like. If you got time to hear this, Joe?
Absolutely.
Okay, here we go. Let's see what she says. Audrey, you got it? Okay, you got it in your hand. Here we go.
Professor Haley, this is my latest blonde joke. Here we go. This one has a frightening aspect to it. It is called a blonde's first experience riding a horse. A blonde decides to learn and try horseback riding unassisted without prior experience or lessons. She mounts the horse with great effort, and the tall, shiny horse springs into motion. It gallops along at a steady and rhythmic pace, but the blonde begins to slip from the saddle. Out of sheer terror, she grabs for the horse's mane, but cannot seem to get a firm grip. She tries to throw her arms around the horse's neck, but she slides down the side of the horse anyway. The horse gallops along, seemingly oblivious to its slipping rider. Finally, giving up her frail grip, she leaps away from the horse to try and throw herself to safety. Unfortunately, her foot has become entangled in the stirrup. She is now at the mercy of the horse's pounding hooves as her head is struck against the ground again and again. As her head is battered against the ground, she is mere moments away from unconsciousness, or even death, when Frank, the Walmart manager, runs out to shut the horse off.
All right, Audrey, I like that one. Put that one up at the top of the collection. That's a good one. That reminds me of one speaking to a guy outside of a Kroger store in London, Ohio, years ago in a former life, and he had a donkey out there where he was actually offering rides for children and charging parents like $2 or $3. So I was just chatting out there in the country with him in London, and I asked him, I says, you know, I says, how long do you have to stay out here to, you know, make a living doing this? And he travels to an area for stays about a week, and of course gets it cleared with the business proprietors and all that. He says, well, about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. He made a pretty good living actually doing that. If he could stay and travel around the country
with a donkey.
Donkey, right? Well, Joe, I think I'm going to suspend the news here other than one little story that would relate to yours, and then maybe later on, if you'd, depending on how long we go, and I think you have a lot to talk about, or we do.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of folks were wanting to be called in. Somebody called me ahead of time because we're going to be talking about Cincinnati. But I thought it was interesting here that with all this talk about guns, Chicago Tribune and New York Times and some other major newspapers in the United States have been talking about guns are something very different in Texas, the way that they look at them.
Mm-hmm.
With all the talk now after the Virginia Tech massacre, folks are talking about new types of restrictions on guns again and more restricted areas where they can go. And, of course, the issue came up about, you know, should we have allowed concealed carry weapon holders to go on college campuses, maybe they could have stopped this guy or at least saved some of the lives. And, of course, that argument, well, you've heard that argument many times. It goes back and forth.
Yes.
On either side. Well, oddly enough, Governor Rick Perry in Texas, they're doing something different. He suggested the other day that Texans would all be a lot safer if gun owners who hold concealed carry weapon permits were allowed to carry their weapons in places where they are now prohibited. And it says in here, this is bad reporting, schools, churches, courthouses, and bars. But they changed that law on churches a few years back so they can do that.
Mm-hmm.
He said, here's a quote from him. He says, I think it makes sense for Texans to be able to protect themselves from deranged individuals, whether they're in church or whether they're on a college campus or wherever they are. He told reporters after meeting with U.S. Health and Human Services Secretary Michael Leavitt to discuss the Virginia Tech massacre. Here's what the legislators have been doing. Meanwhile, they've been aggressively expanding the rights of gun owners during the current legislative session. One new law passed in March extends a gun owner's right to shoot any intruder on his property. Of course, that's that stand your ground kind of philosophy, and invoke the legal presumption of self-defense even if the intruder turns out not to be armed. Another one that they're working on is this week prohibits law enforcement officials from confiscating legally owned weapons during a state of an emergency, and that's one of the things that happened with Katrina. I don't know if you recall that.
Yeah.
The police actually went and seized weapons from some of the homeowners, and later on it turns out that, well, you know what happened there. They needed them.
Needed them because of looting and...
Right. Mm-hmm. Third measure of making it its way through the Republican-controlled legislature would allow workers to keep licensed guns in their cars, even at work sites where employers have decided to ban those firearms.
Mm-hmm.
And they got another kind of esoteric one here. Do you know about the Blind Hunters Bill?
No, I don't.
They're actually trying to pass a law down there where blind people can get a license to, for a gun.
Really?
And they do shooting through these contrived tech laser sighting devices, et cetera. And apparently there are people that enjoy people that are unsighted that enjoy doing this. But Texas now has, it says, the latest census here says Texas has 250,000 license carriers.
Wow.
End of 2005, so it's probably up a little bit now. But I thought that related to what we were doing here tonight. And I'm just absolutely fascinated, and I don't say that as an overstatement about what you found out in your study. And I think at first glance you kind of didn't know how to take these results. Am I correct?
Yeah, I actually didn't. I mean, there was kind of a lack of a prevalence of signs. So, you know, I really didn't know how to take that.
Well, why don't you walk us through this from the start, Joe, if you can, kind of what you did a real nice literature review on this in terms of the number of states that have these laws and don't, and then kind of show us what the setup of your study was like and what you found out, and we'll talk about some of that.
Sure. Well, as you know, you mentioned the number of states that are actually adopting these laws. I believe it's up to 46 states now. So that was kind of the impetus for the study. And basically, what I wanted to find out was, you know, what kinds of businesses and how many, in particular, in Cincinnati, are prohibiting concealed firearms on their premises. So it was a simple study. Really, all I had to do was go around. I used prevalence of signs in storefront windows and doors as a measure for who was adopting the policy to prohibit concealed firearms on the premises. And I pretty much went around, divided the city up into six basic parts, scanned storefront windows, and ultimately, you know, I found, I think, 7% of my sample showed prevalence of signs, leaving 93% that did not.
How's Ohio set this up? Now, Ohio gives anybody the permission to set up a sign to restrict concealed carriers on their property?
Yeah, if the way that I read the law is, you have, as a private business owner, you have the right to either prohibit or not, and if you choose to prohibit, the law clearly states that you do have to have a sign conspicuously posted.
Is that one that the state has to provide you, or can you improvise?
You can improvise. I believe the information I got from the Ohio Chamber of Commerce, they suggested, you know, consulting a lawyer or legal departments just regarding language and size and placement.
Yeah, I think a couple of these other states that I'm familiar with, I think the case in Texas, you actually have to use
the state issue.
Yeah, I could be wrong about that, but Texas likes to have you do a lot of things through the state.
Yeah.
Everything goes to Austin and lost for a month and a half and then comes back.
Yeah. Well, I found, let me try to find the figures on that.
Yeah, you broke them down in a real systematic way, too, the way you studied them, didn't you?
Yeah, actually I did. I found the majority of the signs that I did find, which, you know, it really wasn't that many, most of them were actually custom designed. Some of them adopted language from the state, but they were not signs that were directly purchased from or obtained from the state.
I'm trying to think. The consequences of this must be, I mean, could be serious if the wording of the sign were ever in doubt, wouldn't it? I mean,
legally, I would imagine, yeah.
Because if something happens inside and somebody carried one in and the sign wasn't, you know, specific enough, or at least wasn't legible or something like that, and then some event happens and somebody's hurt or killed, then I could see that being a lawyer's...
A nightmare.
Good, yeah.
So, and yeah, that was, I mean, a part of the study was measures for conspicuousness, because it does clearly state, you know, that the signs have to be conspicuously posted, which, you know, to me means either on the front door or, you know, by the front door. And the majority of them that I did find, they were by the front door. So...
Or did they put them, the ones I've seen have been actually on a door, like on the inside, and I guess about eye level, so you could read it pretty easily.
Right.
Had you actually talked to any concealed carrier license holders that were paying attention to these?
I actually did not get a chance to do that. That would have been interesting, though, just to kind of get that perspective.
Oh, there's so much of this that hasn't been studied, and your study's a good first step to lead people to other things that could be interesting. But go ahead. Tell me what else you found out.
Well, I conducted a couple of interviews with some of these businesses that did opt to prohibit and that did post signs. And I got a variety of answers. I was really expecting to get the general you know, it's going to make us and our patrons feel safer. But that really wasn't even a common theme. You know, I believe one business said that the sign did provide them with a feeling of safety. And interestingly enough, at that location, I noticed approximately a week and a half later that they had taken the sign down.
I wonder if you're an instigator to that.
I you know what? I have no idea.
What'd you tell him? It was to have that sign up there, or what?
Well, you know, I don't know. That was the standard answer that I was expecting to get everywhere else, but I actually did not get that everywhere else. The one of the last interviews that I conducted, the business was the management staff was under the impression that every business, no matter what, was just required to go ahead and post the sign, to adopt the policy and post the sign.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm.
Which is, that's what I thought was most interesting, because it points to a misconception about the application of the law.
And in some ways, I sympathize with the reporters that are trying to cover this. You know, to them, it's a one-day story, and there are seven or eight others that they're writing that day. But there has been a lot of confusion, you know, since the law actually passed. I've been following that news fairly regularly. There's often mistakes in the reporters' coverage of, you know, the details of the law.
I can see that happening.
And, I suppose you took a look at one time or another at packing.org on the Internet?
At what?
Packing.org. Have you looked at that on the Internet?
Actually, I have not looked at that.
A fantastic site. In fact, the site's been down for about 4 or 5 days as of about a week ago, for improvements. And when you get a chance, take a look at that, packing.org. It's fantastic in terms of the data that's on there state by state.
Uh-huh.
And even summarize a little gun news. And they have you go through a, you know, they have you agree that you're not going to hold them liable to the details of any particular, but they got every state's law.
Mm.
All the details, all the carrying, all the restrictions, all the car carrying laws and details, and it's really a very interesting site.
Mm.
In fact, one of the things I just saw in there under the news section tonight before we came on said that ABC's 2020 show is looking for self-defense stories where a gun was successfully used. And if you have one, they have a link there where you can get in contact with that. Then another little news piece that came out here was that a federal appeals court overturned the District of Columbia's longstanding handgun ban Friday, rejecting the city's argument that the Second Amendment right to bear arms applied only to militias. So D.C. had the most restrictive policy in the nation in terms of having handguns,
mm-hmm.
and that's now been overturned. So we'll have to see what happens in that area. But again, these reporters are often very confused about that. So if the business proprietors are actually getting their news from the newspaper, I could understand how they might be confused.
Absolutely, especially if it's a mom and pa kind of place. You know, that may not have a standard lawyer that they refer to or anything like that. So
the ones that you actually identified as having the sign posted, some of those, was there a prevalence of a type of business? In fact, you've got the names of every one of them, actually.
Yeah, actually, I do as an appendix on the paper. The most prevalent type of business was an office sort of place, which the more I think about that makes sense, because as I was kind of going through the literature, the idea of the disgruntled employee showed up quite a bit. So
had a few of those in the last several weeks, haven't we?
Yeah.
Every week, actually.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good thing. You don't want one of those Friday episodes or
right.
Whatever it's called. But that would probably make sense. And you know, you it would be interesting to go out and look at work sites also, like factories and places like that. I know that was an issue up here in Toledo.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Daimler Chrysler place wouldn't allow concealed carry holders to bring their guns into their parking lot. And I'm not sure what the law actually is on that now. I think they can't restrict that, although it is their private property, but I'd have to check that. I know some states have, stopped that idea. In other words, if you've got the gun and you're carrying it to other places for protection, then what are you going to do when you go to work? Hang it up on a skyhook somewhere? I mean, you can't do that. So,
and is that sort of the same thinking behind the concealed carry in the car? Or
yeah, I mean, you know what the change was in the car. I just read over that law.
Right.
Afternoon. Now you can carry it. In fact, it's more liberal than I thought. It says that you can carry it under, you can now carry concealed on your person while you're driving.
Uh-huh.
But you can also carry it. It doesn't have to be either locked in that rack, that visible rack, or your glove box anymore. In Ohio, you can now carry it in a bag or a case, and some other type of device, I forget what they said, but as long as it the top to the case or bag either zips or buttons.
Huh.
So it doesn't have to be locked up, but I guess they want that, they still fear that little delay, that not having that little delay mechanism there in case you decide after you've gotten your CCW license that you'd like to shoot a police officer who's stopping you, right?
Right.
Makes a lot of sense, but it's amazing the people that think that way.
Yeah.
I mean, they think that, people are going to go get a CCW license, and, boy, this is now their chance to shoot a police officer. But Ohio, and you have to tell them where it is, and then the law was changed also about passengers, I think. You have to tell a police officer also, and the driver of the car, if you're a passenger in a car, that you're carrying a concealed firearm. But that, of course, most of the time, nobody's ever going to use this thing in their entire lifetime, but should they need to, ward off a carjacker or a rapist
right.
or like that, at least they won't have to go to a locked glove box or be wearing the gun in the open to do that. So that's, I think that's a substantial improvement in the law. And don't you think as the months and years run out and we see that the cases of the CCW owners, holders going off the rocker are minimal, if any. If you ask me about two or three of them right now, I couldn't even think of any.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't happen. But, if people feel safer doing this, and a million and a half people a year use these firearms for protection to ward off a felon, what's wrong with it? If you'd gone back 20 years with me, I would have been against this, actually. And it's the data. And, I thought more guns was more crime or more accidents, but it's not necessarily the case, and I think we have enough data on that. Well, interpreting your results, you've got some interesting comments in your study. What do you think this means?
It's a tough one to say. I'm more inclined to think that there are just misconceptions about the law itself.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, towards the end of the study, I think that's one of the calls for further research is, if you kind of do a backdoor approach to the same study and you study businesses that don't prohibit concealed firearms, I think that would probably do a lot to clear some of that up.
One of the things you mentioned was that many businesses may actually prohibit firearms in their establishments, but they just don't post signs.
Yeah. And I came to that, you really do have to look at the law and see who automatically falls under the law as an establishment that has to prohibit. You have the standards. That sells alcohol, like you mentioned before, churches, daycare facilities, places like that. One place that I interviewed, I knew for a fact that they did sell alcohol, but I didn't see a sign posted out front. So I went ahead and interviewed them just to see what was going on, and it turned out that they did. I mean, they automatically fall under the law because they do sell alcohol. It turned out that they did have a sign up right when the law passed, but they took it down shortly after that.
That's actually restricted by the Ohio law, isn't it?
Yes, correct.
So packing.org actually put a little note at the end of the restricted places. It said essentially, although Ohio law is kind of confusing, it says essentially if they're serving alcohol on the premises at all, then you're not allowed to carry a concealed firearm in there.
Correct. And I didn't delve into the specifics of the law, so I don't know if it's, if it's an establishment that, 50% of their sales is from alcohol, or the way that I read it was if you sell alcohol, or maybe liquor in particular, which would probably include wine also, you automatically fall under the law.
Well, that was packing.org's conclusion, too. If they sell any alcohol at all in Ohio, you can't carry.
Yeah, that's what I got from it. So,
the Texas, the law was if they make more than 50% of their profits from the sale of alcohol.
Okay. Yeah, I figured some states would probably do something like that. But
that way you could go to Pizza Hut or Applebee's or someplace like that, you would be allowed to carry a concealed firearm. But if it's a straight nightclub or, just a bar or something like that, you wouldn't be able to carry the firearm in there.
Correct, yeah. And a couple other points that particular scenario brought up, I did, looking at some of this research, I did come across a couple of businesses in Ohio that decided to take their signs down because they actually received pressure from Ohioans for Concealed Carry.
Oh, my.
So.
What did they say about that?
What's that?
What did they say about that? Pressure in the form of just a request, or?
Well, that was research that I gleaned from the news. So, and I didn't have a chance. I kind of wish I had a chance to call, I believe it was Kroger, Southwest Kroger of Ohio, and Perkins Family Restaurants. They decided to actually take their signs down because they received pressure. So that would be interesting, too, to figure out, to find out how many businesses receive the same kind of pressure and maybe do some interviews from that side.
I wonder if on the other side of that, I wonder if the Ohio Coalition Against Firearms would be exerting any type of pressure to get people to put up the signs.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt it.
Is there a public service announcement? The Ohio Coalition Against Firearms, you've heard it?
No, actually I have not.
Hold on a second, I'll play it for you.
Okay.
Carrying concealed handguns in Ohio? It's a deadly idea. A message from the Ohio Coalition Against Gun Violence.
Were those gunshots?
Those were gunshots.
Okay.
That's a good message, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I hope every criminal in the state, that is the audience they're intending, isn't it? The gangbangers and the gun toters and the convenience store robbers and that sort of thing—is that message directed toward them or someone else? I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. It's not a very specific message, to be honest with you.
We have another guest on here. Can you hold while we bring them on?
Sure. Let's
see who this is. Hello. You're on Blog Talk Radio. Who is this?
I'm just listening, Keith Haley. I'm learning something here.
Oh, it's Dr. Jack Collins. Okay.
This is he.
Dr. Collins.
Yes, sir.
Okay, Jack, you got any questions for Joe? He has other things here to talk about. Very interesting study, and was this kind of fun to do, Joe? Or
the study was great to do. I had never done anything like it before, and it was good to kind of get out and see what was going on in the community. So,
right. Well, Dr. Collins, I don't know if you know, he was a detective and a police officer in Cincinnati for years, so I suspect, Dr. Collins, you've heard a gunshot or two in Cincinnati, haven't you?
Not like they are today, Keith. I mean, you heard some back in those days. I've seen a few people lying kind of still at times, but I'm curious on the statement that was made that the people exerted pressure. You know, was that the people or the actual public who exerted that pressure? Because I know earlier your guest talked about the fact that some stores took it down because of the customers. I'm just not sure where the pressure came from, if it actually came from the coalition or not.
The way that I read, that was a news article, and I actually probably have that. I believe they got pressure from the organization.
Hmm.
Huh.
So, and I'm trying to...
Well, Kroger, I think, isn't our nation's largest grocer?
Kroger?
Yeah, I think somebody told me it was once, but anyway, it's one of the largest. But I can imagine people, you know, how people run into the grocery store for, you know, dozens of different things during a week. And I suppose a lot of people, I mean, some of the carriers themselves could say, you know, this is a hassle. I'm going to change my business.
Mm-hmm.
I have to keep taking the gun on and off. And I think that's where you get into trouble, is moving the gun around. I mean, people I know, the CCW people that are private citizens, they just leave it in a pocket. You never know they got it. You never see it. I know in Texas it's against the law to even show it unless you're, you know, defending your life or the life of somebody else. And it's probably safer that way. In fact, you don't even take it out. You tell the police officer where it is, and the Texas cops, they don't ever take them. I mean, you know, they assume that everybody they stop's got a gun down there. So.
Yeah.
They don't worry about it, and I think I mentioned to you before that Texas, you can carry that loaded shotgun, sawed-off barrel, as long as it's not shorter than 18 inches in your car concealed.
Yeah. Well, I can see, you know, if you are a permit holder, you know, not wanting to move it around a lot just because it's you know, the restrictions, you know, even within the permit, I can see being afraid, you know, to do that. You know, if you're going to run into the store for a couple minutes just to grab some milk or something, what are you going to do? And you mentioned this before, you know, are you going to leave it in the car or, you know, hang it up somewhere else, or what are you going to do?
And the really goofy element of the Ohio law prior to this change was the one where you had to, one of your choices was to have it on a locked rack on your dashboard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can see, you know, hear people calling in on their cell phones, and, you know, I just saw a guy take a gun, put it in his pocket, and, you know, that sort of thing. So that's really a silly kind of idea. But Joe, what else did you find there, Joe? I know you looked at the various, you went to over the Rhine, you went out to Hyde Park.
Yeah, I broke the city down into six different districts. I hit downtown. I hit Over the Rhine, Hyde Park, North Side, and a couple of areas up in Clifton. And the majority of the signs were actually found in the downtown business district.
What do you call the entertainment district there? What is that actually?
That's Main Street and Over the Rhine.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And that, you know, there are a lot of clubs there, so there, you know, probably a lot of places that do automatically fall under the law. But there are also a lot of galleries and small shops and stuff like that. And I was really surprised that, you know, I didn't see any signs in that area. But then again, I did mention that businesses have kind of been fleeing from that area for a while. And it's just because of general crime issues in that area. As far as I know, that's my interpretation. So, and that news, that article about those businesses receiving pressure was from Newsmax.com, the June 10th, 2004 issue.
Okay.
Just so you know, if he wants to check that out.
Right. That's interesting. Do you think any of these, did any of the proprietors or clerks on hand that you spoke with happen to mention that they had guns on the premises?
No, they did not. Nobody mentioned anything about a gun being on the premises, and nobody mentioned having any problems in the past. Mm-hmm. I think one place told me a story about a man that had actually come in with a concealed weapon. Ultimately nothing resulted. I believe they just called the cops and he was escorted out. But, you know, nothing actually came of it.
You know, one of the things, am I correct? Do you live in Kentucky or do you work there or what?
I live in Kentucky, but I work in Cincinnati.
Okay. That was interesting that Kentucky's law is a little more liberal, is it? In terms of, I don't know if you've had a chance to look at it, but packing.org, I took a look at that today. And there, you know, you pretty much can carry it, you know, just about everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
They look at it more as a real Second Amendment right, and you know, this isn't something the government should be interfering with. It. But I thought it was interesting because on packing.org, when you go to each state, it also gives you a list of the other states that has a reciprocal agreement with the state that you're looking at.
Oh, really?
I'm surprised to find out that Ohio connects up with about 11 or 12 different states, but they don't with Texas, which was funny, but Kentucky does.
Huh.
And I think most commentators would agree that the Texas law is the most stringent in terms of the background checks and the qualifications and the training and all that business. And, you know, they actually have a performance test at the end and also a written test. And for some reason, they don't reciprocate. But I'll bet it's maybe because Texas won't recognize Ohio's. I didn't check that. But that might be the deal that, you know, one doesn't recognize the other unless they, you know, unless
they both recognize each other.
Something. So, well, what do you see as kind of the future of this? What do you think? You've got more on-the-ground experience with this than anything else. There's no reason to expect that a proliferation of these signs is going to take place, is there?
No. You know, especially down here. I don't think, you know, and one of the points of discussion was, well, that, you know, there's a possibility that, you know, people just aren't really all that concerned about it. But it's funny, though, if you go out, you know, and you interview, you know, anybody off the street, I'm sure they're going to have an opinion about guns or, you know, concealed carry laws. But I really don't see much happening in terms of businesses, you know, adopting the policy and posting signs.
What have you just noticed across the river? Is it just Kentucky post signs?
That's a good question. Before I actually did this study, I kind of didn't really pay attention, It's interesting being out now because I pay attention to it all the time. It's, you know, every time I walk into a store, I'm looking for a sign. But I spend most of my time in Cincinnati, so it'll be interesting to get out in Kentucky and see what's going on over there.
We can ask Jack. Are you still on there?
Yes, I am, Keith.
Jack has not only been chief probation officer in Cincinnati, a detective and a police officer, and a county sheriff. He's also been a police chief in Kentucky. And,
okay.
I was wondering, Jack, has Kentucky had that concealed carry law for a long time?
They've had it. I guess I'm like Joe. I can't speak authoritatively about it because being a retired police chief, I'm allowed to carry. They are getting to the point now where you have to qualify more than they used to. Of course, they do in Cincinnati. Cincinnati police officers who are retired qualify once a year.
Yeah, you know what I heard today without giving names? I was talking to a police officer who said that his chief in Ohio wants them to comply with the CCW law in terms of places that prohibit the firearms, like they're off duty.
Well, while they're off duty?
Right. Do you find that odd? I mean, you can't
I find it very odd. I mean, most departments in the state of Ohio, in fact, any place I've been, they expect their police officers to be armed wherever they go.
Well, I do know there are a few that don't want them to be, that actually don't want them to carry off-duty guns. And back in the Ice Age, when I was a cop, I don't think the department could even make a rule like that because you were a state peace officer and you know...
Right.
You were expected to?
Was statewide. I think that's been carved up a little bit now, but I thought that was sort of odd, actually. I mean, there's so many cases, and Jack, I know you would know lots of them where police officers have been on the spot.
Yeah.
In terms of preventing a crime and saving people's lives.
Well, Cincinnati at one time went overboard. I mean, guys would go to the beaches and they'd see some captain and he'd say, "Where's your weapon at?" But bottom line is that, like Joe said, you're a policeman 24 hours a day, and you don't give that up once you walk out of the station house.
The guys on the beach.
It does happen. Somebody expects you to do something. I mean, it's just the bottom line.
My gosh. Since you folks are from that area down there, can you recall, since the law has been passed in Ohio, have there been cases of CCW people getting in trouble?
Off the top of my head, I can't think of any. I probably don't pay as much attention to the local news as I should. So.
I think the bottom line is I also, not seeing where anybody for CCW has gotten in trouble, the gentleman who shot the teenager in his car was a certified concealed person, but he actually went in his house and got the weapon and But I mean, that had nothing to do technically with the CCW because he didn't have it on him at the time.
What was that case about? What happened there?
That was with the kid on the front lawn, right?
Right.
Okay. You can go. You probably know more about it than I do.
A young kid in Kennedy Heights, apparently out in some odd time of the morning, went up and stole a gentleman's car out of his driveway, started to drive away, and the man saw it, and he took a gun, and he shot at the door, and I would assume he shot at the kid, but the bullets actually went through the door, lodged in the kid's by his neck, and the kid died, and... Joe Dieters wouldn't even prosecute. You know, he said the man had a right to do what he did. He wasn't a police officer, so he wasn't bound by not shooting in a fleeing car. And with the same week, they had a guy in Winton Terrace who had that little corner store, and the guy came in. Well, he got robbed probably about a month before, and the guy came in, robbed him, didn't expect to be blown away, but he blew him away. And Dieters wouldn't prosecute him either, and the public was pretty much questioning, well, aren't we, okaying vigilante justice? And I think Joe Dieters did an excellent job on explaining what vigilante justice was versus protecting your own property.
You know, in Ohio, we still have that duty to retreat, though. You would think that would have been a case whether he was, he wouldn't be allowed to do that.
Well, the guy in the store couldn't have retreated. The guy with the car, I think there was a lot of questions, but...
That was a little bit iffy. I mean, the point being, he did go back into the house.
Right.
And that's, I think that's the key element of the case there.
You know, in Texas, you're allowed to... Was the car case, was that after dark?
It was early in the morning, and I think the sun was starting to come up. I remember that. But it was like, I think, between 5:30 and 6 or something like that, and the sun had risen, but you couldn't have told if the kid was a kid. I mean, let's face it, kids don't look like kids today.
See, that's another oddity I think you and I have talked about, but in Texas, after sundown and before sunup, you can use deadly force to protect your property.
Yep.
And the cases that I wrote about in one of my writings about firearms was a young man who had had, he's in his mid-20s and had a family, lived in a poor neighborhood, but he had really expensive wheels on his car, mm-hmm. and they had taken them twice before. They were worth $1,200 or something like that. And so the guys came the third time to get them. He kept replacing them. And he drilled them with a rifle and reloaded and shot him, and they didn't indict him because you're allowed to use deadly force to protect your property. But nobody took his tires or his wheels after that.
Yeah.
For sure. But then another case that I knew about was up in Wisconsin, where the owner merely pulled the gun out to shoo robbers out of his store. I think there were two or three of them, and they prosecuted the store owner for having a firearm on his premises.
Huh.
That's a different way of looking at the world, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's Texas. That's not the world. Haley, what's wrong with you?
That's another side of the whole, business owners opting to prohibit or not, though. It's, you know, what do they do for protection? Or, you know, what about these guys that do cash drops every night? Or,
exactly.
You know, but they, you know, for some reason they feel obligated to prohibit, you know, for their own safety, but that means they can't have a weapon in case they need it.
Well, it's one that we're not gonna solve. But Joe, I want to congratulate you on an excellent study, and one again that not only things you found out, but the questions you raised about how to look at this and how to interpret this. So, looks to me like sort of overall from your study that this is kind of the issue sort of waned, hasn't it?
Yeah.
That's the way it is. Well, Jack, you have any comments on this you want to say before we close off tonight?
I have no comments. I enjoyed Joe's presentation, and I agree with Keith that you've probably done more in that study than anybody else in Cincinnati has.
Oh. Well, thank you. It was fun.
Audrey's giving her usual signal that it's time for us to say goodnight. So, Joe Kendall, I want to thank you very much for presenting your study to us tonight, and best of luck to you in the future.
Well, thank you very much, Keith.
Dr. Collins, we'll be seeing you and talking with you later.
Okay, Keith. Have a good night.
All right. Good night. We'll be seeing you folks again.
All right.
Night. All right.
Bye.
Again, don't know when, don't know when, but I know we'll meet again some sunny day. Smiling through, just like you always do, till the blue skies drive the dark clouds far away. So will you please say hello to the folks that I know? Tell them I won't be long. They'll be happy to know that as you saw me go, I was singing
again.
Don't know when, don't know when, but I know we'll meet again some sunny day.